audio recorder. I'm going to put that over here, actually. I learned the hard way. Are we recording? No, we're not. Yes, we are. Good. I learned the hard way with that audio recorder that if I put it here and I'm on a microphone, it picks up two voices. It picks up my voice, and then it picks it up off the speaker. So you get this horrible echo effect. So I put it over there. And with luck, it'll only pick up from the speaker system. The point here is, as we go through here, I'm creating audio, I'm creating Lizette video. So I want you to be aware of that, first of all, that we are recording. Don't say anything to people not recorded. If you do not want to be captured on video, please let us know. And we'll make sure that you're not on the video. And I'm not sure how we'll let us know. Just sort of catch his eye and go, okay, you can do it, sir. You don't need to tell everybody in the room you don't want to be on video, but just sort of catch his eye and let him know that you don't want to be on video, and we will respect that. This is important because the audio and the video, they get put online, they get put on the internet, and everybody in the world can see them. And which is okay, there's nothing wrong with that, but it's important that people know this ahead of time. I've learned again the hard way that if you take somebody's video and put it online and they didn't know about it, sometimes they object. So, and this is an important part of Web 2.0, the idea here that we're not just consuming, we're not just receiving things, but we're creating something. Aha, we have a couple more people. So with that, I'd like to wrap up. I'm just kidding. I love doing that. I'm not sure where we were. It's not sure. Oh, yeah. When we did the introduction, we never did that part table back there either. Do you guys feel different on that table there? Sort of set apart? Okay. Sorry, I have way too much fun when I do these things. So, yeah, I want to keep it,
it was my turn.
One mark of a professional. This, by the way, this is my Tim Hortons mug. Tim Hortons is a coffee company in Canada. They sell coffee and they sell donuts. So what was the name of that place, sir? Pardon?
J. Co.
It's like in the mall, they have big lineups of people. We have, in my city, we have 140,000 people. It's a small city. We have 31 Tim Hortons outlets. And they're all busy. So, yes, we love our coffee in Moncton. So, overall, the plan for these workshops is today to look at client side, the stuff that you get on your computer, the programs, the applications that you use, and then tomorrow to look at server side, to look behind the scenes at how they set up websites and how they set up other applications. Somewhere in there, and it's not actually in the slides, I will want to talk more about the concept of e-learning 2.0. I'll be throwing resources at you over the next couple of days. You've got in your packages lots of URLs, and we'll be pointing to these URLs. Those URLs are in the packages just to make it easier for you to navigate. These sessions are very interactive. You've all got your computers going. Most of you will be online now. And we will be going to different websites. You'll be creating accounts. You'll be trying out the software. And tomorrow, depending on how it all works out, I should be able to get you accessing servers and working on the server side. Tomorrow, because it is on the server, server side, I'll probably have you working in groups rather than, because I don't want to be creating 40 separate websites. That would be a bit much. So, but we'll work on that. I'm going to play that a little bit by ear and we'll see how that goes. So, and basically it's going to be, I'm going to show you stuff, I'm going to practice this stuff, and we're going to go through the different applications. Again, most of you said this is new. So, for those of you for this isn't new, some of this will be reviewed, but that can't really be helped, I guess. But we'll look at all of these things from different angles and different perspectives and different point of views. The objective here, and this is really important, we're covering a lot of stuff. I don't expect you to remember it all. That would be silly, right? And one of the aspects, one of the points of the learning theory that I talked about is you can't make people learn by standing up in front of the room and telling them stuff, right? So that's why we're going to have you practicing a lot. And the thing is, not so much to have you learn all of these things and memorize a whole bunch of terms and all of that, because you have your notes here, and you refer back to your notes. What I want to do is, first of all, to make you familiar with these things, to know that they exist, to have some sort of sense of what they do, right? So that you've seen them, you've experienced them. And you might not know them, but you know enough about them that when somebody in the future talks about them, you remember them. And then secondly, to remove a lot of the mystery. People talk about the web, and especially they talk about Web 2.0, and they make it sound very, very difficult and very mysterious. And a lot of this stuff is not difficult. It's not mysterious, and you can learn about it for yourself. And so what I want to do is give you, if you will, the foot in the door, right? To get you through that door and to see, oh yeah, I can do this. And then to be able to carry on yourself. So the websites that are in your handout, that's your foot in the door. And then the different things that we'll look at, that's your foot in the door as well. How does that sound?
Yeah.
Sounds all right? So, to begin with, then, see, I'm doing this to make him work. He was a little slow with that camera panning, right? So I walked off the camera screen. Sorry, roll. I love doing that. Again, the whole thing is about creating stuff, we're having fun, it's informal. That's really important. It's not formal. It's not everything's planned, but we don't know. Nobody knows what we're going to do next, and that's a big part of it. So, what I'm going to do now, how am I going to have time? I have no clock. I thought there was
5 to 10.
Pardon me?
5 to 10.
Bennett, when is the break? When is our first break?
10:30.
Okay. I just want to make sure I'm on schedule, more or less. So what I'm going to do now is I'm going to talk about Web 2.0 in overview, in outline, to cover the major aspects, the major themes that run through Web 2.0. This is a bit me talking rather than you practicing, but I would like to be able to give you the background before we actually start working on the technologies themselves. So I'll give you my picture-free slide. Okay. What I want to do, first of all, is just give you the really quick tour of Web 2.0. Here's one part of Web 2.0. It's a site called Flickr. How many of you are familiar with Flickr?
one, two, three. Now, Flickr is a very interesting site because what it does is it allows you to upload your photographs and store your photographs online. And so here I am, this is my Flickr account here. And here are my photos. Here's the photo I took yesterday, for example. Isn't that nice photo? And so I took that photo with my digital camera and I uploaded it to Flickr. But the thing about Flickr is I can share my photos with other people. Other people can comment on my photos. See? This is someone called Bionic Teaching said, wow, amazing looking place. And Darcy Norman, who lives in Calgary, in Alberta, Canada, where I used to live actually. There we go. The view outside the apartment window is his favorite. He made this one of his favorite pictures. So, and I can create sets, but one of the things that I've also done is there's a pool of photos that was created by a group of people. And so here's photos that were created by a bunch of friends that I have online. And they've all created these photos and they've all put them up to share. And I can look at someone, one of these, like this one here. Oh, that's nice. And it's not going quite as fast as I would like, but generally, this site goes about, we've got like 40 computers going here, so things are a little bit slower. It usually goes pretty fast. So I can look at this. And I can add a comment. So I really like the lighting effect. I'm going to post the comment. And you notice I'm posting the comment here. Oh, it did reload the whole page. Sometimes it doesn't. See, and now I've added the comment. I can also add a tag. So what I've done there is I've created some information. Now you see what happened there? Right? I added the tag here. And there it is. I hit add. You notice it did not reload the whole web page. It just added a little bit of information there. That's Web 2.0. Here's another site. I hope this one sometimes doesn't work. This is a site called Blippi. Blippi is a very interesting site because it allows me to make diagrams online. I thought I was logged in earlier, so I'll have to log in. Now what it's doing right now is in the background is loading a whole pile of JavaScript. And it's loading it slowly, unfortunately. Well, while it's doing that, here's another site. How many of you are familiar with Wikipedia?
Yes.
That's a fact. Well, not everybody knows. Is Wikipedia is new to some of you? I like Wikipedia a lot. Wikipedia is an online encyclopedia. Here it is. There's a random article. I like doing that. But this is the sort of thing that you should do is every once in a while, if you just have some time, go to Wikipedia and read random articles. So here we have an article about John Cleveland. whoever that is. The son of an usher in a charity school. Cleveland was born in Loughborough, and then you can why do you need to know this? Okay, he opposed the election of Oliver Cromwell. Okay. Anyhow, John Cleveland, everyone. And what's really interesting about Wikipedia is anybody in the world may edit this article and make a change to this article. And so I can just type whatever I want. And if I hit, I'm not going to do it because I've done it too often. As I said, please don't put junk in our articles either. But, yeah, I can edit this article, I can add information to this article, whether it's good, whether it's bad. There's nothing that stops me from adding information. But what happens is there are hundreds or thousands of people who take care of this article. And if I was to put junk in this article, somebody would come along in just a few minutes and clean up the junk. Now, as you can see, I've logged in. Right. So if I put junk in it, they would know who did it. So I'm not going to put junk in it. I might sign out and then put junk in it. And they would know. And the idea here is that a large number of people all working together on the same site can, in an unmanaged and unorganized way, can create a very useful resource. And Wikipedia is a very useful encyclopedia. It has been tested for accuracy. There was an article in Nature magazine that compared it with Encyclopedia Britannica and found that they are comparable in terms of accuracy. And of course, Wikipedia has more than a million articles in it. And of course, it is always right up to date. Let's see how Wiki is doing. Here we go. No VPN passwords. So what I'm doing now is I'm creating a new document. I'll just call it KL. And you see what I can do? Check that out. And basically now I can use these sheets. And there's a whole pile of different libraries and things. So I can draw this line in here, for example, and draw this line from here to here. And Glippy allows me to create these diagrams right on a web page. And again, what's happening here is it doesn't reload everything. As I work with this, it communicates back with its server. Again, I'm just doing a very quick show here. YouTube. How many of you are familiar with YouTube? Right. We saw YouTube a bit earlier. The thing that I showed you right at the very beginning, that was a video off of YouTube. We'll be back to YouTube. What else have we got here? How many of you are familiar with Facebook? Facebook is an interesting Web 2.0 application. Let's see, it was kind of slow this morning, but let's see if it's faster right now. Oops, relax. Yes. They don't want me to leave with these pictures. Facebook takes a little time. Here we go. This is Facebook. This is known as a social network. This is my own page on Facebook. You can see I'm signed in here. I can do neat things on Facebook. Let's see what we got here. Let's look at the profile. What I've done on Facebook is I've created a profile for myself that other people can view. It's going to take a little bit to come up. Don't you love the picture? That's me at my best. And look at the things that I've done on Facebook. I've got messages that have come in from people. I managed to make my connection. This is a message that I created for other people. People want to play a game called Hangman with me. This is I haven't looked at this today, so I don't know what's going to be here necessarily. This is information about myself that I posted online. Here are my photographs from Flickr, which I make available to people. This is called the Honesty Box, where people can make a comment about me anonymously. This is a place where I can keep track of all the cities that I've visited around the world. And I'll have to add four up here. What else have we got? Somebody gave me a gift. These are causes that I support, political compass. The sticky wall, or the sticky notes, somebody can write sticky notes. This here is a tag cloud. Remember I showed you the tag in Flickr. This is a way of displaying tags. This is information about me and my Macintosh computers. These are slideshows that I have online. These are my friends. Look at all my friends. These are all different people who are online all over the world that I'm connected to on Facebook. Some of them I even know. These are posts from bloggers that I know. These are books that people are reading. These are people who have books. This is my newsletter in Facebook. This is Radio BU. What is Radio BU?
Radio.
I forget what that is. I think this plus this Open Learn course units are both from the Open University in Britain. Tony Hurst will have created that. Voicemail, which I don't use, but it's there anyway. Another cause. Scrabble-licious is where I play Scrabble with my friends. Music, here's the Hangman Tournament again, which I haven't been playing. I'm in someone's circle of friends. Here are some notes that people sent me. Aww. Someone who misses me. Who I don't know. Happy birthday to the universe. This is somebody who has put up a video. Here's a photo. Connections. Here are messages that I've received. Okay, well that's pretty good. And I'll just pop into my Scrabble book. That's Web 2.0. In a nutshell. That's what Web 2.0 looks like. It's not web pages anymore, is it? You can see it's something very different from web pages. This is what your students are using. Sometimes in your classes, those of you who have classes. Oh, my sister-in-law is... This is my sister-in-law. She plays Scrabble with me. Always Google ads. Google ads everywhere. So let's see how my Scrabble game is going. Yeah, we have to wait a little bit. Alright, whoever's streaming video, they're going to stop. So there's my Scrabble game. You'll notice I'm winning. So it's almost at the very end. Try to play Scrabble while I'm doing this often. Guess that wouldn't be a bad idea, but this game's almost over, and once I play those last four tiles, I'm going to win my Scrabble game and defeat my sister-in-law. Web 2.0 is very satisfying, too. not popping in the Second Life because we simply don't have the bandwidth for it today. But Second Life is a three-dimensional world. Remember when I did the introduction earlier, I said that I worked on MUDs, multi-user dungeons, multi-academic user domains. Second Life is the modern version of that, where it's not simply text-based like the old MUDs were, but we have three-dimensional pictures of the world, and you can enter into this world and have your own, what is called an avatar, your own character that you play with in these three-dimensional worlds. So, I'm sure we took a quick tour through Second Life. Here are some of the basic underlying principles of Second Life. The things that distinguish Web 2.0 from the older, more traditional web. You think about the older, more traditional web, that's the web where you have personal home pages or you have company home pages. That's the web where you might have a company portal. Right? There's lots of talk about portals and things like that. That's the web where courses were taught online using a learning management system, or some people call it page turners. That's the web where information was presented to people and people would read it or they would consume it. They would consume the media of the web as though it were an old media like television or like radio or like a newspaper. Somebody else published it and you would be the viewer, you would be the receiver. In Web 2.0, we create more interactivity. We create more back and forth. You know, all these different activities that you saw on Facebook. And here are the major elements that make that possible. First of all, structured data. That's kind of a vague term right now, but what structured data is a way of presenting content online on a web page or through an internet service where the data is organized in some way. For example, and we'll look at this a little bit later, there's a type of data called RSS. RSS is data about web pages, and it's presented not just as a whole pile of text, but first the title, and then the URL, and then the description, and then the author. And the point of it being structured is all of these different parts are clearly identified, so it's not just a mass of data, but it's organized. And what's important about that is if it's organized, other computer programs can read that data because it's structured. Because it's organized in a certain way, it can be used by many different computer systems. Which leads to our next idea, services instead of websites. It used to be, if you wanted to create content so that people could read it, you would create a website and you would put content on your website. But now, remember when we just looked through Facebook as we were scrolling through, we saw my newsletter there, right? What I've done is, instead of creating my newsletter as a website, I created my newsletter as a service, and then I made that service available to Facebook. So the idea is that one website to sort of reach behind the scenes and grab content from another website and bring it and put it on the front. So it's a way of distributing content, distributing services, distributing processes or functions from one site, from one server location to another server location. So services means that websites can work together, a number of different websites can work together to bring information from multiple sources. And what they say is they choreograph this information. So the classic example of services is a travel agency. And you might have a travel agency and it contacts the hotel and it contacts the airline, and it contacts the car rental, and it obtains information from each of those different websites, and it conducts transactions with each of those websites. So you are at the travel agency website, but through the travel agency website, you're interacting with a large number of different websites. Remixing content. That's what happens when you start getting multiple services working together. You take content from many different sources and you reorganize it. You change it. You reshape it. You do things with it. With a site like Blippi, for example, I can bring a diagram in from somebody else and work with it myself and create something new out of something that somebody else created. And many, many of the websites like that are like that. Here's something I've done. I scrabble game. Sorry, I'm used to being this twitch and it shows up and it's confused. It seems like that. Well, as when that comes up, what you'll see is it's going to show a topics page on my website. And what I've done is I've taken content from Wikipedia and I've read it into my website, and I actually included with material from my own website. So the Wikipedia here and my own stuff right here, it's mixed right together. But it's not going to come up. It's not going to come up. Yes.
And problem is copyright when you use any content from.
Yes, there is a problem with copyright. And obviously, you cannot just take content from anywhere. If you take content from Walt Disney, they will complain. Copyright laws vary quite a bit. There is an international treaty on copyright called WIPO. And then there are individual national bodies that cover copyright. The laws are very different in different countries. In Canada, for example, we have a much looser law than in the United States, which has something called the Digital Millennium Copyright Act. The way that people who are working in Web 2 address this is with open types of licensing. What that is a way of licensing your content so that you make it very clear that other people can use the content. For example, while we wait for this page to load, go to the bottom. You see this right here where it says, it's kind of hard to see, Creative Commons. Here, I'll just raise that up higher so you can see it. There's Creative Commons. That's a licensing agency. And what I have done is all of my content, all of my audio, all of my video, all of my text and my articles and my PowerPoint slides, I attach that license to it. And a Creative Commons license is a way of telling people that they can use this content for their own programs. So, this is a link, and you can also click on that link. I don't know if it'll show up if I click on that. Let's see. So what this will do is this will take you to a license that states exactly what the terms and conditions are for reusing content. So I use something called an attribution non-commercial share alike license. And what that means is anybody in the world can use this content, mix it up with their own content, no problem. As long as they give me credit, say that they got it from me, and as long as they do it non-commercially. And so people who are sharing content attach these licenses to it. And so if you are mixing content from other sources, the idea here is that you try to use open content, for example, Creative Commons licensed content, and there are some other open licenses.
The information is available, it's in the RSS feed on the site, and you take it for granted that you can feed that into your site and display it, or should you still check for the license?
I would check the license. It's, yeah, people, it really depends. Because, the reason why I say it really depends is with RSS feeds, a lot of the time the license is not attached to the RSS feed, which makes it tricky. And so you don't know, right? So, the one thing is the licensing. The other thing is a concept called fair use or fair dealing. And again, the laws vary from country to country, but in general, you are allowed to use small portions of other people's content. And especially if you do it for non-commercial reasons or educational reasons. I'll give you an example. Let's go to Google. Oops. And I don't know what I'm going to see here. Sorry about that. Anyhow, let's pretend that Google has images on its website, and it does not filter its images. But the point is, those images do not belong to Google, right? But you're allowed to use a little image, a thumbnail, it's called. And you're allowed to use little bits of content, but not the whole thing. So, and that's fair use. And what fair use is that it allows you to sample somebody's content, but not to use the whole content. And so, you can use little bits of content, and you can use open license content. And so, what I do on my website is I use open content, like Wikipedia, for example, is open licensed. So I'm allowed to use Wikipedia on any of my web pages. Let's see if that came up. Here we go. Search topics. There we go. Academia. So here's my research page on academia, right? On this side, this content came from Wikipedia, and the content on the right came from my own website. And so this is the idea of remixing, or sometimes it's known as mashing content. So far, so good. And I'll stick to the known territory. The next major principle is the idea that users are in control. And what that means is that as a content provider, you don't control the message anymore. What that means is that people organize their own content and their own information according to their own preferences. We looked at that, I wonder if I still have this up here, this Facebook page that I was on. No, I don't have it going anymore. Well, we looked at this Facebook page. This Facebook page was organized by me, not by the company. Right? This page presents the information the way I want it to be presented, not the way this company wants it to be presented. Everybody's Facebook account, everybody's Facebook profile page looks different. People organize their own information. Pardon? You can personalize it, exactly. And what's really interesting about Facebook, here's my main Facebook page. It's Here we go. And I can actually just look at this. This is different kinds of stories, different kinds of information that's available to me on Facebook. These are events, games, photographs, notes, relationships, I guess, friend networks. I don't even know what some of these stand for. And I can choose to have more or fewer. I can show more events. I can show fewer events. Each person can set up the information coming to me on Facebook according to their own preferences. And so when I have my news feed here, I will get more events. I will get fewer pictures, or however I've decided to set that up. I control what this news feed looks like. Imagine if your newspaper was like that.
I know something. Can you change actually the template itself? Instead of blue and white, can you have black and white? Or is that not allowed?
I have no idea.
Is that something I know Facebook, they have very...
It's a pretty ugly site, isn't it? I don't know. I've never tried to change the template.
You can change the components, but you cannot make it like MySpace. They're on the background.
Yeah, MySpace I'm a bit afraid to go to. I mean, I've already had one incident, I don't want more. But MySpace, you can change the background, you can change all the colors in that. Facebook's not so much so. But a lot of the sites, you can change the appearance as well as the content. Every website's a little bit different in this way. But yeah, I think Facebook, we're kind of stuck with that basic look. Which is too bad, because it is kind of ugly. But the main point here is that the user now controls the display. The user picks what information they are going to receive and how they are going to receive that information. Think about that from the perspective of a teacher or an instructor, right? Now, you can't tell your students what they're going to be listening to anymore. And it changes how you approach learning in that sort of environment, doesn't it? The next thing, communities build social information. We saw this most clearly with Wikipedia, where people come together, the community comes together, and by interacting with each other, creates information collectively. Wikipedia is just one place where they do that. If we look at Flickr has, remember we saw the tags in Flickr. And everybody tags individual web pages, and the community, by tagging web pages, create knowledge or background information about the collection of photos. So you see quite a bit of this in Web 2.0, where people work collaboratively online to create information collectively, either by connecting to each other, by tagging things, or by actually writing out the information that's on Wikipedia. And then finally, separating content from style. And again, this is the idea that the presentation of the content is distinct from the actual content itself. You need to be able to separate the presentation, the way the content looks, in order to be able to send the content to other sites. If we talk about things like XML, for example, I'll talk a little bit about XML later on. The idea of XML is the content itself, and then there's a layering on top of that of how that content is presented, and that's how we're able to give users choice about how content is presented by separating the style, the presentation, from the content itself, and allowing people to choose different styles.
Is
The idea of Web 2.0 was sketched in some basic writings that have come out on the internet over the last few years. And again, I'm just going to mention these to you, and you can access these articles or, in some cases, these books on your own. Probably the first, this came out, I think it was in 1998, if you can believe it, something called the Kundrani Manifesto. And it was written by David Weinberger and some other people, and then signed by a bunch of people. And what the Kundrani, I really don't like the name of it, but what the Kundrani Manifesto says, in essence, is that markets are conversations. What they're trying to get across is the idea that in the era of communications, the era of web communications, we're no longer broadcasting information. We no longer have an unequal relation between the knowledge provider and the knowledge recipient, but rather we have an interaction, a communication, a negotiation that takes place. And one of the ways in which we can see the effect of this is in the concept of what's called the prosumer, the person who produces as well as consumes. The idea here being that a person who is a consumer, a person who buys something from a company, actually plays a role in how that product is created. And it's an idea that comes actually from Alvin Toffler from the 1970s, the idea that people could design their own clothing, or they could design their own houses for themselves in cooperation with the clothing manufacturer or the house builder. And it's the same way with information products and services. People can design the information that they want to receive. Then we have Clay Shirky and Chris Anderson. Between the two of them, came up with a concept known as the long tail. And how do I want to describe this? I do want to connect it to this board eventually. It used to be the case that suppose we have a newspaper, we might have one newspaper with, say, 1 million subscribers. And you might have another newspaper with 500,000 subscribers. And that was it. But today, we have websites like mine that have only a few thousand subscribers, say 10,000. Or we have other people's websites, I don't want to name them, that have maybe 10 people read their website. And what the long tail is if you list everybody's websites, all the different websites, and all the, at least what, a billion websites? I forget how many websites there are. Suppose you listed everybody's website. Most of the websites only have one or two subscribers. Right? Only a few have a large number of subscribers. And that creates a curve. So here's all the websites created by all the teenagers out there in the world, all the personal blogs and all that. They each have 10 readers. And then the few that have large, many readers, like the New York Times, might have 1 million readers. This here, this part of the diagram here, is known as the long tail. And the characteristic of the long tail is many, many people, each communicating with a few other people, rather than very few people communicating with a lot of other people. Right. This is like TV and radio, where you have a few channels and many subscribers. And this is like blogs and websites where you have many channels, many different websites with equal and few subscribers. Before the web, this didn't exist. Before the web, we didn't have, you know, online services, content services with only 10 subscribers, because you couldn't do it. You can't have a television channel with 10 viewers because it just costs too much to have a television channel. So Clay Shirky, Chris Anderson, and others say basically, this is a whole new source of content, but this is also a whole new market. Because if you think about it, this power law exists not just for broadcasting, not just for web pages and communications, but it exists for all kinds of things. Remember I talked about the way people can create their own products. Most people want ordinary shirts, but if you can have custom-made shirts, then you can have many different kinds of shirts that have only 10 buyers for each of those shirts. I don't know, like a pink and yellow shirt. I don't know. And again, I don't know, maybe people wear pink and yellow here, but in Canada, nobody would wear a pink and yellow shirt. So you have very few people buying pink and yellow shirts. So it used to be you could never get a pink and yellow shirt. Right? But now, because you can custom make, you can personalize the way shirts are made, you can have pink and yellow shirts. And you only sell 10, but that's not to make money. If you can customize them and personalize them that way. And so the idea here is that this long tail represents the economic opportunity from customization and personalization. Here's another example. When I was doing content development in Manitoba, in Canada, we were looking at the courses that we were offering to high school students. Well, high school students, right? Well, you have the English course, right? And so there's lots of people taking the English course. Math, lots of people take math. Science, well, you know, all the students got to take science. And then we had a course like world politics. Well, it turned out in Manitoba, in that 1 year, there were 30 people interested in world politics, and they were scattered all across the province. Normally, this would mean you cannot offer world politics, because normally you have to have a class of 30 people, at least, because it costs a lot of money to have a teacher in the class, right? So, there used to be, there was a cutoff, right? And this cutoff was the cost of having a teacher. But now, because we were offering courses online, even if it was an unpopular course, like world politics, we can offer this course because we can do it less expensively. We don't have to have a teacher in every single school. We have one teacher who serves the two or three people in each high school across the province. And again, that's the long tail. We were able to customize educational programs for people because we were able to use these communication technologies. Another concept, and this is from Tim O'Reilly. We're getting about that time. What time is it exactly?
10:30?
Okay, and then there's probably stuff outside, isn't there? Okay, why don't we take our break then? I did mean to go a bit faster than that. Hold on. And how long is our break? 15 minutes. Okay, so we'll take a break for 15 minutes and then we'll come back and carry on. So we can probably turn that off.
I missed it. I didn't want to follow it. I thought I was going to do it. I know.
3 hours and 40 minutes. I don't think we did enough. But right now, I'm not sure which part is the part.
What is it?
All the questions.
Thank you.
And the concept is this. Each person creates a list of people that they know. That's it. That's social networking. And well, they create the list of people that they know, and then they use that list to communicate with those people. And if you think about it, we look at this group here in this room. Some of you, look, each one of you will know some other people, but not everybody, right? And so, when you're talking, like during the break or something like that, you'll probably talk to the people that you know. But the idea here is that you make connections with other people, and these other people are your sources of information. And what happens is that when you take everybody all together, it creates a network of connections. And this is an interesting way of thinking about communication, because now an idea can spread through a whole room just by going from person to person, where each person has a connection with someone else. So if I said something to one person and then they said something to their friends, the idea would diffuse through the population as a whole. And so you have sites like Facebook and Orkut and MySpace and others, which are based on these lists of connections. The origin of this is actually from instant messaging and SMS, where people have their list of buddies. And I remember with ICQ, I used to use ICQ. I still do use ICQ, not as much as I used to, or Skype, where you have your list of contacts. And again, these are the people that you talk to. Second major concept is tagging, and we looked at tagging a wee bit. What tagging is the idea that any person can create their own word or phrase to describe any resource. Again, that sounds more complicated than it is. Here's something my wife made this actually. If I hold this up, what word do you think of? Somebody think of a word. Anything.
Bag.
Confused truck. Right? Sack. Now imagine that you're all working independently and you each pick whatever word you want to use to describe it, right? So a lot of you, just based on what we saw here, would use the word bag, right? The few, not as many, would use the word sacks, and one person would use the word trousers, right? And the idea here is that we can get the most accurate description of an object by each person picking their own name for what this object is. And if I was searching, suppose I was searching for something online, and I typed bag, because you tagged this with bag, you called this a bag, this is what would show up, and I would admit that you tagged as bag. The idea here is that people create descriptions of things, and these descriptions are useful for finding things. And what's interesting about this is people pick their own words. They're not choosing from a list of words, right? They're not choosing from a predefined vocabulary. They don't have to follow rules. They just pick whatever comes up to them, whatever comes to their mind. And it's them choosing the words autonomously like that that creates the system of classification. The contrast to tagging is a system of classification that we would use in a library, like the Dewey Decimal System or Library of Congress system for classifying books. And there's a lot of rules for the application of those taxonomies, and you have to tag, you actually have to hire experts to create these indexes, right? And so tagging is the amateur way of doing indexes. Tagging is to indexes what Wikipedia is to encyclopedias. The amateur, unorganized way of creating indexes of things. The next thing is called AJAX. That stands for, you know, love this, asynchronous JavaScript and XML, which is a horrible, horrible name for a very simple concept. And here's what AJAX is. On your web page, you have a JavaScript. The JavaScript is a little piece of computer code that goes on the web page and can do things like present content on the web page. So, for example, in JavaScript, you might have a command that says document write. And document write hello world, and it will print hello world on your web page. In JavaScript, there is a command called HTTP request. And what that command is a way of sending a request to a web server. So you send the HTTP request to the web server sends you back some information, and then your JavaScript displays it on the page. So all AJAX is a way of having a web page communicate with the web server without having to reload the page. That's all it is. Remember, and think of it this way. You remember when you went to a web page and the web page said you have to log in? It's a pretty common experience, right? And so what do? You have a form there, you type your username, you type your password, and then you click submit, right? And what happens? The whole page reloads. Because that's the way forms work. Well, with AJAX, when you click submit, just a little tiny piece of the page reloads. The main page just stays there, and it uses this HTTP request to log you in without reloading the whole page. And we saw an example of that in Flickr. Remember when I typed in that tag in Flickr, and I hit submit, it did not reload the whole page. It just reloaded a little bit to do with the tag. So that's AJAX. Related to AJAX are application program interfaces. And what an application program interface is the set of parameters associated with a web page, or a web server more accurately, that tells you how to get information from that server, or how to send information to that server. For example, we have Flickr. So here's Flickr. I know it's bigger than that, but we'll pretend. And Flickr has all of my photographs on. Remember, we saw my photographs on Flickr? Here's Facebook. What I want to do is get my photograph from Flickr and show it on Facebook. And so what I need to do is send a request to Flickr saying, please give me my photograph. And then Flickr will send my photograph back to Facebook and then I can display it on Facebook. The API is the set of rules that tells me how to formulate my request to Flickr. And typically what I'm going to do is I'm going to send a structured message from Facebook to Flickr. And it will say, get this photograph. And it will contain the login information, perhaps. It'll contain the name of the photograph, what version of the photograph I want back, how I want it to send it back. And the thing about the application program interface is it varies from website to website.
Google or Blogger will use one API, Flickr will use another API, YouTube will use another API. But generally the thing to keep in mind here is that these are ways that you can, these different services, these different web servers, communicate with each other to exchange data among themselves. And then finally, JSON is a neat little hack, actually. People don't talk a whole lot about JSON. Those of you who are especially more involved in programming will want to keep this in mind. JSON is a way of making data from one website available to another website. And the way it works is here is a web page, and now this is the actual source of the web page that we're looking at. And in this web page, we have a bit of JavaScript. But what this JavaScript is actually JavaScript that's located on another server. So suppose I have my website, and the source of this JavaScript is, I don't know, Google or Flickr or some other website. So I put in this tag, script source equals, and then the URL. And what my web page does is it gets this JavaScript and it inserts it into my web page. And what makes this JSON is, instead of inserting a script, which is the way we would normally do it, it inserts a data array. And there's actually a precise way of representing the data in that array. The main thing to keep in mind is it's a whole bunch of data. And it might be names and addresses, it might be URLs. I use something like that for web pages, so it's the actual contents of web pages. And the idea here is that the content of one website can become part of the content of another website. And again, what JSON is a way of moving content from one place to another place. And now that I have the content here on my web page, now I can start manipulating it, displaying it, doing whatever I want with it. The main idea and the main thing to understand about these underlying technologies is that in one way or another, they're all about creating communications between things. Communications between people. Communications between websites. Communications between data. Communications between content. It's all about relating things. It's creating a web of connections. And if you had to characterize Web 2.0 in a sentence or two sentences, it's web of connections. The old web was the web of content. Remember, content is king? That was the old web. The new web is the web of connections, or the web of relations, between people, between data, whatever. Any comments or questions? Does this make sense? Wikis? Oh, do it be? Wiki? I'm sorry, I'm not hearing you, I'm sorry.
I think it's LinkedIn.
Oh, LinkedIn. Oh, okay. Yes. Definitely. LinkedIn is a social networking site.
This is the one he's talking about.
We'll look for that.
Yeah, it's definitely social network. It's, again, it's about connections, right? It's LinkedIn is specifically about business connections, business relations. It's a more professional networking than personal networking. And it being slow. There we go. Find the people you know. Your company, your school. Surprise, I thought about it. Yeah, it should be about me. And you'll see all of my connections there eventually. You see again, it's like, it's about adding connections, people adding connections, connecting information, connecting people. All these people. So, I have 70 connections on LinkedIn, which is actually quite surprising to me. Now, you might be asking, well, okay, this is all Web 2.0, what does this have to do with learning and e-learning or anything like that? And what it's doing is that it's changing the nature of learning itself. It's changing the way we approach the whole idea of, and I don't even want to say teacher content, because it even changes that. And these are some of the things that I've identified in my own work, how Web 2.0 applies to learning and becomes e-learning 2.0. One thing is the idea of learning as creation. Not so much right now, but as we go through the rest of these sessions, you'll see the application of this in the things that you'll be creating yourself. And when we look at schools and universities, you'll see how people are creating things in order to learn rather than simply reading books or listening to lectures. It's the idea of learning as being something that's social. Learning is not an individual thing as much anymore, but something that people do together. Something that people do by creating these connections between each other and creating these relations between each other. Learning itself is social. Knowledge itself is social in the sense that the knowledge of how to do something is contained across a number of different people. And each person plays their own role. And to learn something or to know something is not simply to acquire facts in your head, but to be connected to other people in a certain way. Technologically, we will see this implemented in something called a personal learning environment. That doesn't exist yet. That's coming in the future. But the personal learning environment is most likely to be the application that replaces the learning management system. Those of you who are familiar with Blackboard and WebCT, or even Moodle or Sakai or Boddington or any of these other learning management systems, these systems are organized around the institution, organized around the college or the university. But learning systems of the future will be organized around the person, the individual student. And you remember how you saw with Facebook, how I set it all up, I had my Scrabble game and I had my photographs and all of that. Well, that's how people will set up their learning as well. They'll set up their math course, their science, their psychology, or whatever it is that they take. And they will access resources not simply from one institution, but from multiple institutions. So, in my Facebook account, you saw that I had my photographs from Flickr and my videos from YouTube and my newsletter from my own newsletter sources and all of that. Similarly, in the personal learning environment, you'll get some knowledge, content, or whatever from the University of Malaysia, others from IBM, others from their local community, others from their network of friends. And all of this will come together and they will organize it themselves in their own way. Immersive learning is the idea of learning by doing, learning by bringing these things in and creating yourself by actually using the technologies for the content that you'll be applying later on in your life. And then the idea of the living arts, the idea of, how do I want to put that? The idea of the transformation of the learning institution from something that delivers content and resources to people to an organization or a facility that makes it possible for people to create their own learning. And the living arts. There's a center in Mississauga, Ontario, which is a city in Canada. It's called the Living Arts Center. And what it is, it's not a place where people go to take classes. It's a place where people go to create things. And they create pottery there, or they create glassworks, or they create plays or drama, or they create music. And that's a different way of approaching learning, right? It's a different way of approaching education. There's not courses and programs, it's people coming together as communities and groups and teaching themselves. And the purpose or the role of the center is to provide the space and the facilitation, the resources that are needed, rather than the direction. Now, as e-learning 2.0, people think of it as a technological concept. But it's not so much a technological concept as a way of organizing learning. And now we're caught up. I wish I had a clock. I would have sworn there was a clock here yesterday, but there isn't one today. Okay. How many of you have gone, well, let me ask you this first. How many of you have blogs? Four? Five? Okay, let's have everybody have a blog. So that when I asked this afternoon, I said, how many of you have a blog? You can all raise your hand. How does that sound? Yeah, okay. So everybody go to blogger.com. I'm going to create a blog. I'm just going to need to shut up and you guys can do some stuff. And we'll see how long it takes for 40 versions of blogger.com to get out of it. Blogger is a company that was created originally by Pyra Labs, and then it was purchased by Google. Now, that's what it looks like on my screen. It looks different on your screen, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah? Okay, let me sign out here, and I'll show you what it looks like on your screen. Oops. Please wait. The first thing you want to do is, if you don't already have a blog, is to create an account with Google. So, here's where it says, create a blog in three easy steps. So, click on this big orange arrow where it says, create your blog now. And we'll all wait. And now you have this form here in front of you. And what you're doing now is you're creating a Google account. This will make Google very happy. If you already have an account, just sign in up here. Create a new one. Here's why I wanted somebody else to do video, because it's impossible to manage video around the session at the same time. How are people?
Thank you.
He sent an email with us. Yeah. I use my Stephen and Adam's CA email address.
Tell you how to do it. You're all moving forward on your own now.
Thank you.
What you've created here is your own personal website, basically. And what a blog is a set of entries, or a set of posts. Each entry in a blog is called a post. Here's a blog that I have called Half an Hour. And you'll be able to see here in a second that as time has gone by, when I've felt the need to write something, which is fairly frequently, I write different posts. And posts can be short, can be long, can be anything that you want to write about. And so here's a post, for example, that I've written. It'll show up here in a couple of seconds. You see, it's just an article that I've typed in the space there where it says start posting, and I just started posting, I just typed my article in. And the idea here of a blog is that each post or each article is dated. And when you go to the home page of a blog, here's the home page, I just clicked on the title of the page to go to the home page, it shows the most recent page first, the most recent post first. So this is something that I wrote about a week ago, and then as you scroll down, and I write more on her post, you can see here's something I wrote a few days before that, and then we'll see something I wrote a few days before that, January, and then if I kept going, you'd see it go further and further back into history. This is a really convenient way of presenting content, isn't it? Because it means that somebody can visit your page, and they don't need to go searching around to find what's new. Is what's new is what's ever at the top of the page. And so if you're reading a blog, you just go to the page and you start reading until you hit something you've already read, and then you're caught up. Does that make sense? And blogging has become very popular. There are tens of millions of blogs.
Sure.
There are tens of millions of blogs, and the reason why is that a system like Blogger, and there are other systems as well, make it very easy for people to create their own blog page. So, how many of you have created a blog now? Almost all of you. Some of you aren't admitting it. And you can see now, and you know, remember when the web first started, it was very hard to create your own web page. Now, all of you have a website that you can put your own content on. Now, what we have found, myself and other people who are involved in learning, is that the creation of blogs is a really good way to start people into e-learning 2.0. It's a really good way to use the internet in learning. And there's usually a process that a teacher will go through in implementing blogs in their classrooms. Typically, though, the first thing they'll do is they'll create their own blog. So those of you who are teachers now, you all have your own blog. And typically they create their blog and they tell the students what the address of the blog is. They say, class notices will be placed on the blog. And that's really handy for the students, right? Because the students just go to the teacher's blog and all the notices are right there. You know, and if they want to see the one from back at the beginning of the year, they just scroll down and they see the stuff from back in September or whenever. And what happens is, as time goes by, the teacher starts putting not just notices, but then now they start sort of putting resources. Here's an interesting link. Here's something you might want to see. here's the readings for next week's class. And they start, you know, they don't simply present things anymore. Now they begin to draw things together.
They begin to
connect things, right? So it's, the blog is not simply me writing stuff to you. The blog is me connecting to this resource and connecting to that resource. And it's actually very simple to do. Let's take a look here. We'll go back into Blogger here. And here's the editing page for one of my articles. So let's actually create a new article. That might be a better idea. And because I have no imagination, I'll call it sample article. And so suppose I'm an English teacher and I'm teaching my students about Shakespeare. And so what I want to do is I might say something about Shakespeare, like, I don't know, I like Shakespeare. Happy face. And now I'll try to connect or link to a resource. So I'll open up another window. Oh, Wikipedia. How handy is that? And I'll search in Wikipedia for Shakespeare. Still have to learn how to spell it correctly. And so here comes the Wikipedia page on Shakespeare. But what I'm going to do here is I'm going to copy the URL. So I'm just highlighting the URL, and I'll right-click, and I'll copy it. And I'll go back into here, and I'll see I have Shakespeare. I'll highlight this. And this icon here is the link icon, so I'll just click on this. I hit Control V. I could also have done a right click and paste. The same thing. But what I've done is I've put the URL that I got from Wikipedia in. Oh, and then it didn't work. So I'll try it again. So there we go. Yeah, I pasted the link in, so I clicked here, I clicked on that link, right, and then I pasted the link in there, or I could just type it, either way. And the link was the link that I got from Wikipedia, so it was this link right here. Okay, so I copied it here, and then I went in, clicked on here, and then I pasted it in here. Like that. And then I hit OK. And so now, here is my link in my page. And what this is what teachers do, right? The teacher's creating, you know, they've got a class tomorrow about Shakespeare, so they just create a blog post on Shakespeare and they put some links in. And then they hit publish post. And so now, we'll take a look. And there it is. And the thing is, if you type this address in your browser, you'll see it. And this is the power. Right? You just saw me do it there. It took me a couple of minutes. You know, if I wasn't explaining it as I did it, I could have done that in about 15 seconds, right? Search in Wikipedia for Shakespeare, copy the link, paste the link, publish the page, I'm done. It's the day before my English class, my students who are at home on Facebook or whatever can read my blog and go to the Wikipedia page before my class even starts. And so that's sort of the second step in using the blog in the classroom, isn't it? Where I'm not just putting class announcements, but now I'm beginning to put resources and things like that. Oh, that's pretty good.
Yeah. I said the labels, you can use the labels so you can actually you want to categorize it easy for the students.
That's right. You're quite right. Good point. I never do that. So let's I can click on this pencil and edit. So here's my entry again that I just created. Remember we were talking about tags earlier. I can tag my post. Google Blogger, they call it a label, because it can't do, it has to be something different. So one label is Shakespeare. So I can just type that in. And now I'll publish it. Now my post has been tagged. Let's view it. It looks the same, it's just it has a label on it. See? But now look, click on this label. This is all the posts of mine with the label Shakespeare, and there's one. And where's the... There should be a way to search for this label for all of the blogs. Up at the top here. I don't want to search the blog, I want to search everything. But anyhow, the students can look at all of the blogs, sorry, all of the posts on my blog that have the label Shakespeare. I don't need labels a lot, so.
Well, that's just to give you an example. It's like, especially if you're conducting different sessions, but week one, you can actually label everything for week one. So,
right.
So when you go back, here's everything for week one. Oh, that's all the people got.
Yeah, exactly. So, and different people will use labels in different ways. As Zed just said, you can label, you know, all the stuff from week one, label it week one. All the stuff from week two, label it week two. Just like you're categorizing photos in Flickr, you can categorize blog posts in Blogger, just according to whatever system you use. Of course, now that you've done that, the next thing you can do is you're an instructor and you say, well, I have a blog, and I use that to give information to my students. Why can't my students have blogs? That makes sense, doesn't it? And so we can have all of the students have blogs. And so if I have a writing assignment, I might have a writing assignment that says, go to Shakespeare, write something on Macbeth, put footnotes or links in your post on Macbeth, and then I will read your post and grade your post. And so we see the use of blogs beginning to spread now, right? Now it's not just me using blogs to communicate with you, it's the students using blogs to communicate with me. And then finally, what tends to happen is, once students have the ability to create their own blogs, they don't wait for me to tell them what to do. They just start posting themselves, and they start collaborating and communicating themselves. And I can say something like, okay, students, set up your blogs to organize yourself to do a project together, or to exchange information among each other, or any sort of communicative task like that. The idea here is that once this tool has been put into the hands of the students, they then can run with it. They then can start being creative and linking to each other and commenting on each other's words, sharing information with each other, and using this tool as a way to organize themselves. And that's what happens. That's exactly what happens when we see blogs that are being used in a classroom. The students are able to organize themselves to do group work or collaborative projects using the blog as a way of communicating with each other, as a way of sharing resources with each other. So how are your blogs coming?
Remember I talked with the long tail?
They're very end of it.
It's sort of sad, right? To create the blog, nobody visited it.
So there.
What's the address of your blog?
Learning
2008.
Yeah. Learning 2008.
Yeah. At the Learning. Please find me. This is the neat thing, too.
You can't find him.
Let's go to Google.
Go to Google, I think you can.
I'm going to try Google. Learning 2008?
Yes.
What can you search for now?
Then your rank might not be that high yet.
Well, yeah, it's not going to be high at all. Well, I'm trying to find certain. What was it you recommended? Is that blog search?
Yeah. Google blog search. I just searched for the time of your blog search.
All around, okay, I got you.
Then you can do latest. Then you
might do. Where?
Just write blog search and you can get to.
All right, what was it? Learning 2008?
Yes.
Sort of a phrase we used to go there.
In the last hour, the last hour.
Yeah. So what we need the last 10 minutes. No, it's not there yet.
Quote, unquote. They should be okay. It's 2 words, right? Learning 2008 is 2 words.
Yes.
I don't know what he's saying.
So I have here the proof. No. Just two soon.
That's our. Just like that's our. That's the one.
You got it?
Yeah.
There we go.
Yes. You can discover it on Google.
There. Found you on Google.
Pick up in
it. Now we see the communication begin to happen, right? I try to make connection. Look, you got the link here. Check that out. Yes. I don't even know what that is.
Very good website.
I hope it's not bad. I've already had my share of bad experiences. English version. Okay. So, and now I can post the comment, because this is what happens now, right? People have a blog, and then people start posting comments back and forth.
By accident,
And this blog does not allow anonymous comments. Okay. We'll be back. Probably a good idea. I'll check that. And now you've got comments on your blog. And it wasn't the worst comment. Somebody already
did
it. Well, let's find out. There's Keen. And whose blog is this? I like Shakespeare.
I'm sorry, but somebody commented.
Now you see, see what happened here? I discovered this blog by following the comment in the other blog. And that's how that web of connections gets created. And now, Kian, I'm not sure how to pronounce it, has sent me a link about Shakespeare. And, oh, a nice and knowledgeable guy. I think I'll comment on that. Oops, if you post something, yes, you can remove anything that you post. You see this little garbage can here? You can use this little garbage can to remove anything that you post. And if somebody posts a comment to your blog, and you're the owner of your blog, you can use the garbage can to remove their post from your blog. And I actually have to use that quite a bit because people put stuff on my blog that I really don't want them to put on my blog. So if I find that they put something on my blog that I find offensive or I don't like or whatever, I just use the garbage can and I get rid of it. We don't need to deal with that, do we?
Is there any way to block it or anything like
keyboard or something? No, you can go to that it will not post until you have you have accepted the
So we'll go back here. Let me go back to my blog. And I'll go back into the controller here. Here's the settings. You can set all the different settings. You can rename your blog and give your blog a description. This will have your blog searchable in Google. I don't know what transliteration is, that's new. Add the button to the post editor toolbar for converting words from English to Hindi script. So there you go. And there's other options. Here's the comments options. See, I just click here under settings. I can choose to show comments or hide them. I can decide who can comment, anyone, which is what I choose, or require registered users, or Google accounts, and remember I mentioned OpenID earlier, now they're beginning to use this in Google, in Blogger. I can enable comment moderation, which means that if somebody comments on my blog, I look at it and I decide whether or not to show that comment to other people. And that way, nobody can put stuff on my blog that I have not seen and approved. And if you're a teacher with students, I recommend using that. And then show profile images and so on. There's all kinds of options that you can choose here. And you can make your blog accessible to other people. This is one of these ways where you can have multiple authors in one blog. See, I can add other authors. I can invite people to contribute to my blog. I'm not going to because I'm very private, but I could. And I can limit who can view my blog. So I can have it, suppose I'm a teacher and I have a class of students. I can have only people I choose read my blog. And I can limit it so that only my students read the blog. And this is especially good with your students, right? You might not want your students to be broadcasting to the whole world. Pardon?
As a moderator.
Right, you can act as a moderator. you can have only certain people read the blog. So you have a lot of control. Now I better make sure I don't want to change my own settings. You can also set or organize the archiving. And that's the way that the copies of your blog are stored. And there are also various publishing options. So again, you have a lot of control over how your blog is managed, how your blog is controlled. Now I'll leave this as an exercise for you. Actually, I wanted to come back to Blogger one more thing. The other thing you can control, and this changes from time to time to time, so it's always a bit different each time I look at this. You can change the appearance of your blog using the templates. You can change colors. Remember, somebody didn't really like the colors? Here's all the colors that you can choose from. More colors, text colors. And you can see here, so here's my current coloring scheme. Let's change. What do I want to change? Oh, I don't know. What would happen if I use this guy?
Something one.
Yeah, here's what.
New blog title? Or?
Yeah, that's what I'm trying to do. Okay. Let's change that to red. Check that out. Oops. Yeah, I like that. Let's save the change. I'm going to take seconds. Okay. You see that Ajax effect, right? I hit save change. It didn't reload the whole page. And it saved it. And now I can view the blogs. And it should show up with the red instead of the orange that it was. So if you don't like the colors of your template, change them.
You got a comment already?
I got a comment already? Oh, yes, I did. Uh-oh, I'm afraid now. And so now we're going to do a little discovering here. Moonim or Moonim? So look, I've just discovered another person. And here we are. Currently, I am J.W. Marriott, JL, attending eLearning 2.0. Aw, I met us. But do you see how this works, right? And this tells you a little bit about how to use blogs and how your students use blogs. Right? You don't just write in blogs. I was reading somebody yesterday, I forget who it was, he was saying, what makes a blogger interesting is that they use something other than blogs. So the idea here is, you read other people's blogs, you comment in other people's blogs, and you're writing your own blog. And so there's this interaction that's happening, and as you read, as you comment, as you write your own things, you discover other people, and you create this web of connections among other people. And it's like social networking, only it's distributed. You can make blogs on other sites. WordPress is one of those. I want to get this right because WordPress. WordPress WordPress is software that you can download and install on a web server, but there's also WordPress.com, which is a place where you can create your own blog as well. It's just like Blogger, only here. Express yourself, start a blog. And so now you can all have two blogs if you want it. Right? Same sort of thing, right? Username, password, confirm. Same sort of process, and again, you can create a blog on WordPress instead of Blogger. So you don't have to use Blogger.
I did a blog.
So same kind of blog, same sort of thing. It's a slightly different system. Yeah, there's differences. There's subtle differences between WordPress and Blogger. And the big difference is Blogger is a big company. And WordPress is small open source. And then there's another site, and I like this site a lot. And if you have younger students, they may actually be using this site already. It's LiveJournal. This is one of the original blogging sites. And again, you can create, as you can see, I already have sort of an account here. You can create a blog on LiveJournal as well. What's interesting about LiveJournal is that it has a social networking feature, so you can choose a list of friends who are connected to you in LiveJournal and who can read your blog or who can comment on your blog. So you can be very precise about who's allowed to see your content in LiveJournal. This is very popular among younger people. It's almost a cliche that the typical LiveJournal user is a 14-year-old girl. It's not completely true, but it does appeal to that younger crowd.
Friendster
isn't a blogging site per se, it's a social networking site. And actually, Friendster isn't popular with anyone anymore. But yeah, you're right, though, it is older people. So I'm going to leave these other blogging sites for you if you want to create accounts on those sites.
I was just wondering, do you also do microbook blogging?
Are you talking about things like Twitter?
Yeah.
Yeah, but later on. Now I want to point you to some blogging resources, and again, we're not going to have a chance to go through these in any sort of detail, but remember I told you that you can change the template and change the colors of that in your Blogger blog. There's all kinds of ways you can customize your blog, both your Blogger blog and your WordPress blog and all of your other blogs. And so these resources I cannot overemphasize how many resources are available. Go to this Mashable page, for example. And this is what happens, right? We have the basic blogging platform, and then we have all of these resources that can be added to your blog or that help you configure your blog. So people can customize their blogs in many, many different ways. So here we have a site called Mashable, which is a very good website, the blogging toolbox. So here's WordPress. Remember the WordPress that I showed you just a few minutes ago. There's a way to view WordPress themes, which is like templates for WordPress. And so on. Here's Movable Type is another blogging platform. Here are things for other blog hosting services like Blogger, some of which you can even pay for, although I don't know why you would. because there's all of these free. There's WordPress, there's Blogger, there's Zanga, there's LiveJournal, Vox, Tumblr, mini blogging. Twitter is a blog post that are 140 characters. That's it. They're very short blog posts. Tips, blogging tips, and so on. And I'll let you explore these on your own. So everybody's blogs are coming along all right? We now have the most blogged about event in the world. Yeah. Now, if I really wanted to be nasty, I'd have everybody link to my webpage. There's a... Blogging is a bit of an art, and there are ways to do it. Remember the first... I'm sorry, I forgot what your name is, but you created the blog, and the first thing you said, nobody's reading my blog, right? And that's actually a common problem. You might be surprised. I wrote an article called How to Be Heard, and if you went to this site here, you can see it. It's a bit of a longish article, so I'm not going to cover all of it in detail, but basically, this article describes to you how to go about setting up your blog so that it will be read, it will be found and read by other people. And the idea of blogging is that you're not simply blogging for the sake of blogging. It's like you're not speaking for the sake of speaking. When you're creating a blog, you want to be doing it for some purpose, for some reason. A classroom blog or a subject blog or something like that. My own website, my own blog, which is downs.ca. Everybody likes to downs.ca. See, this is OL Daily, which was mentioned earlier on today. And this blog has shorter posts. It doesn't have long ones. It just has short posts. And it's focused entirely on the subject of educational technology. See, this short little post, nothing wrong. And the reason why people read it is about something. It's not just me saying, oh, I'm so wonderful and you're everything I have to say. I'm talking about something that's of interest so that people are able to learn something new from reading this. And that's what you need to do, is to offer things of value, offer information, offer resources, offer links. What you want to be doing is trying to give things to your readers to make it worthwhile to read. And once people begin to read, and once you read other people and start commenting on their blogs, then a community begins to form around the blog. And you become part of that wider community. And what that community is depends on the subject that you're talking about. And what has happened now, you know, the way the web is structured now, is that there are communities surrounding just about every topic that you can think about. Blogging community. So there's an edublog community of hundreds of people who write edublogs. Let me show you. I need to find here are the edubloggers. Look at this. These are all people around the world who write blogs on the topic of educational technology. You're up to the G's now. They're me. Next. And it goes on, And they're all over the world. And it's interesting, there's me again. And these are all people that I've come to know over the years. Because, and now there's various newsletters and articles and magazines and so on. And what has happened is this community has formed. And all of these people are linked to each other. And there are different types of edu bloggers. There's some that write in kindergarten to grade 12. There's others that focus on college and university. There's others that focus on corporate learning. And Zen has created a Malaysian one. What's the address of that?
Learning Malaysia.
With a hyphen or
no hyphen?
I got it here.
It's quite used, it's not a much.
Yeah. So, you're learning in Malaysia. And so, you can read that, and then you put a comment in that, and people will find your blog from there, and the community starts, right?
It's just one more thing I recommend that there's a book, even a community, Malaysian even a community, Facebook also. So, you know, Facebook, you go to groups. There's one guy who started, not me, someone started e-learning community in Malaysian e-learning community, which is quite good to join. It's only about 15, 16 members now, but I think within a few months it's like probably 200. In Facebook, if you're in Facebook.
Yeah, and we'll come back to that. We'll come back to Facebook in a little bit. We're also covering that today. Some other resources, Robin Good is based in Italy, in Rome. She's very good. She has lots of stuff, and that's a guide to blogging there, and as well, blogging for beginners. And again, if you have students who are just starting to blog, you should give them these resources, and that tells them how to go about setting up their web pages, and how to go about, you know, just getting off the ground, because getting off the ground is the hardest part. I've written an article called Educational Blogging that you can find at that address, and that describes, remember how I talked about the different ways that teachers can use blogs? That describes that in quite a bit more detail. And the different stages of educational blogging, from beginning with using the blog to put course announcements all the way through to having your students organize themselves. I've added some resources here in case you're interested in blogs and marketing. I'm not sure if you are, but if you are, here are some links that you can follow to look up blogs and marketing. One of the really interesting consequences of blogging has been the use of blogs for journalism, because again, it's a representation of this idea that people are creating their own learning and they're creating their own media. These are resources that link to that. It looks very different from this last week. were using a theme that I designed. This week, they're not. Okay. So anyhow, what this site does is it allows you, because, you know, if you don't have a place to store photos or video or anything like that online, if you don't have your own web server, then you can use a site like Our Media, upload it to this site, and then link to it from your blog. Again, the question was, you know, how do I get readers for my blog? And the flip side of that is, how do I find blogs that are interesting to me? Because, you know, I mean, there's 10 million blogs, 20 million blogs, I forget how many blogs, I don't know, 60 million or something like that altogether. There's a site, and if you go to this site, you might want to do that, called Technorati. And here it is. It's got, Technorati's a bit slow because it has become very popular. So what Technorati is basically a blog indexing website. And what you can do is use the search in Technorati to find blogs that are of interest to you. Let's search for e-learning 2.0. See if there's anything out there in the world of blogs on e-learning 2.0. Yes, there is. There's 18,269 results for e-learning 2.0. And what's interesting is, now Technorati will show the stuff that came out most recently. So this post here, this Dual Library Learning 2.0, that came out 2 hours ago. So somebody typed up that post just a couple of hours ago. I'm impressed because it's 12:30 in the morning where I live. So, and here we have day one show coverage live from Detroit. Here we have videos about e-learning 2.0. Here we have, I don't know what we have, and so on. And so we can find all of these resources. I wish they wouldn't do that. They changed Technorati a bit here, so you have to actually click on the little gray link down there to go to the website. So here's somebody's blog. It's tmttlt.com. And it's a link to some nice tutorials for Web 2.0 and Library 2.0. I want you to follow that link. See how one thing leads to another, leads to another? Now, here's something really sneaky that I do. What I do is, I go to Technorati, and I type my own name in. And then I search. And I can find, if somebody out there has written about me, I can find out what they've written.
Is it only track the ones that are registered there, or
it tracks? No, it tracks everything.
So maybe you should find about you from here and now.
Well, it's going to take a little. Technorati isn't as fast as Google, so it takes Technorati a little bit to discover them. It takes a, you know, it might take a day or two to discover these. But
Well, some of you actually mentioned my name, so, but I don't think, yeah, see, it hasn't shown up yet. So here's something that someone called Vicki Davis wrote. And you see, she mentions me, and so I can see that she mentioned me. Now you might think, well, that's pretty egotistical. Yes, it is. But it's a good way for me to be able to keep track of what other people are writing about me. Well, suppose you're an administrator of a university, like, is it University of Malaysia?
University of Malaya.
Of
M-A-L-A-Y-A.
M-A, okay. Like that. Let's see if anybody's writing about it. Yeah, we're not. Yeah, here we go. 976 results. Here's something that was written 44 minutes ago.
Bakri Musa.
Bakri Musa.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're familiar with them?
No.
There we go. That was written today. World Bank report, so on. See? I don't know who that is, but... So,
you think in California, I think.
Pardon?
Michigan.
So, here's the stuff written on this topic. Any topic that you're interested in, anything, there's people writing about it. Writing about it 44 minutes ago. And publishing it in their blogs. And you can use a site like Technorati to find these things. Do you see how powerful a tool that is? And there are people out there who are using Technorati to find your stuff. Well, you have to write it first. But once you write it, then they'll find your stuff. The Technorati will find your blog, it will index your blog, and it will make it available for other people to search through.
It searches only blogs, or...?
As far as I know, well, actually no, they've extended it to videos and photos. That search doesn't work well. It works really badly, actually. If we go to Stephen Downs, actually, I'm not going to do that. I've learned. I'm not going to do photos of my name. But Technorati does not find the photos that I have under my name, under photos. So it's not very good under photos. The other thing Technorati has are tags. And so let me go back to the front page again. And let's type in, let's try learning. Oh, they've done it, they've changed it on me. I'm going to cheat. Technorati tag and then learning. Now what this will do is it will find posts. Remember how we tagged the post in Blogger? Now it'll find posts that are tagged. And so here are posts that are tagged learning. And so it's a different way of searching. I don't find it as useful as just the plain ordinary Technorati search. But it is still, nonetheless, it's a way of taking advantage of the way people classify these resources themselves in order to assist the search. Life that worked last week doesn't work. This is life on the web, folks.
This is why I don't like doing my PowerPoint presentations a week ahead of time to be printed out, because things change. Oh, HTML. Never mind. Oh, no, I can type HTML. Isn't that interesting? That's very annoying. Okay, so that's what I wanted to cover for the morning. It's just the blogs and tagging and technorati indexing. Are there any comments or questions on these topics to this point? Can you begin to see, Lee, that this would change the way you do learning in the classroom, how you can use these kind of technologies to create interaction and communication? And as well, you can use these sorts of things, especially the search in technorati, for people who are doing research or for you to do your own research. And one of the things that I talk to people about is how to use this kind of technology to stay up to date and stay current in the field. I use technorati and searches like Search for eLearning 2.0 in order to find out the latest thing that people have been writing about these topics. And the reason why I'm able to stay caught up and current is I can use these things, and as soon as somebody comes up with something new and they post it, I'm able to find out about it right away. And so my knowledge is pretty much, you know, up to date on a day-to-day basis. And it gives me a huge advantage, doesn't it? Because I don't need to search, you know, what I mean by that is I don't need to go to libraries, I don't need to hunt around web pages, I don't need to be lucky in order to find out new developments in my field. I just keep track of what people are writing about in their blogs, and because of the way all these connections happen, if something happens pretty much anywhere in the world related to my field, I find out about it usually within a few hours. And it's funny because it gives me, anyways, a very different perspective on my discipline. You know, people think of a discipline, they think of knowledge as something that's firm and static and unchanging. Knowledge is stuff that's in a book that you put on, you know, you print it and you put it on a shelf. What I've discovered is that things change. Things change very rapidly. And when I'm in a discipline and I'm connected to other people in the discipline like this, I see knowledge as something that's very fluid, very dynamic. Not something that I can capture and hold in my mind, but a constantly changing state of affairs. But the best I can do is be in a position to see how the changes are coming and be able to react to them. I don't try to capture and hold it. Rather, I try to ride with it or surf with it. I try to adapt to it on a day-to-day basis. Because it's always changing. And the skill to be able to work in this new kind of environment is the skill of being able to adapt to that change. To be able to go with the flow, or even to be able to know how to influence it, to shape it in your own direction. It gives you a very different perspective, and it's something that you know, I can stand here and I can talk about this all day, but it's something that you have to see and experience for yourself by writing blogs, by reading blogs, by following this, seeing this state of knowledge change on a day-to-day basis. Even things that we thought for sure were true from the day we were born, you know, or the day we studied in school. The example that people like to use is the example of the planets. Now, when I was in school, there were 9 planets, right? Mercury, Venus, Earth, Mars, Jupiter, Saturn, Uranus, Neptune, and Pluto. Yes. But not so long ago, the international astronomers decided that Pluto is not a planet. a decision I strongly disagree with, I might add. But still, they decided Pluto is not a planet. So now children in schools today learn there are 8 planets. You know, that's something pretty basic. But that's the environment that we live in now, where even what is a planet, the number of planets, is something that changes. And so learning isn't learning a fact like there are 9 planets, but learning is learning how to find out how many planets there are, and who knows about planets, and who's talking about planets now, and how to apply planet knowledge. Well, there's not really very many ways to apply it, but you know what I mean. So that's the beginning, the first little look at e-learning 2.0. This afternoon we're going to look at quite a number of other applications, so you make sure you have your email address handy. You'll be creating more accounts, and we'll look at other ways of communicating and interacting with each other and with content out on the web. So we'll end our morning session on that note. 3 minutes early, and we'll get back together, I guess, in 1 hour. And oh, did you want to tell them about lunch arrangements? Or So we'll see you all back here in 1 hour, and I guess that's not the point.
When I find Google Scholar business meeting, I get too many articles they want me to make.
Oh yeah. So I'm learning how to do so. First, I was following everyone, every lesson started. So I only move, I do move 4 or 5 seconds, and then I'll move it.
Sure.
Fully get fit in that.